We're talking about the heartwarming and fun people and places in Wisconsin today. Hi, I'm Jill Nagel, and I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller. Mike Bino is back with us. He's the editor of Our Wisconsin, a magazine that is packed with stories, photos, recipes, and a lot more. And they're all about Wisconsin. What's your family's favorite off-the-highway attraction in Wisconsin? We'd like to hear about it. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post your questions, comments, or photos on our Facebook page. We'd like to see some photos of your favorite vacation spot. Hello, Mike Bino.
Hello, Joe. Great to be with you.
Great to have you back with us. I always look forward to my issue of Our Wisconsin.
Thank you. Great job. Thanks so much.
You know, I have to say, Mike, that my favorite article in this issue was the one on the Jurassic Park. Let me repeat that for everybody. That was Jurassic, not Jurassic.
Jurassic Park.
Yes. And, you know, I actually saw a short little video on this attraction that was done by Marshfield Community Television a while back. And this guy is hilarious. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Clyde?
Well, yes, Jurassic Park, it's located near Marshfield. And over 15,000 visitors come to this place every year, and it really is a couple's home. Okay, and the big attraction, at least on paper, is about 200 metal sculptures made by an artist here. But you know, really, people are coming to see the sculptor and artist himself. The man is a hoot, Clyde Winia. He gives tours through his compound, let's say. It's wooded, and he shows people his works, and these are extinct creatures from the Iron Age.
Yes, they are.
Okay, well, yes, he claims they crawled out of the swamp near his home, and walks people through there, and you can see everything from, dragons, turtles, insects, frogs. There are some sculptures here that are taller than buildings, some of them that are about the size of a small dog, and there are a lot of metal dogs here as well.
Yes, I saw that.
But he's wonderful. He cracks jokes. I think he missed his calling. He worked for decades as an attorney, and in retirement is doing this. And he's even got a figure in Jurassic Park, a barrister called Abe Lawbender, holding court. So the best thing is it's free, but your best to give them a call before you take a drive out there. And I'll go ahead and give their number for info. It's 715-387-1653. Jurassic Park, call before you go, then prepare to laugh.
Absolutely. He really is one of the most natural, funny people I have ever seen.
Well, yeah, my favorite line in the story, of course, is, you know, we asked him, where do all these ideas for these sculptures come from? And he says, they just happen, especially when I go off my meds.
Exactly, exactly. And his wife is also a talented artist, too, isn't she?
That's right. His wife has a shop there. His wife, Nancy, has a shop there called The Hobbit House, I believe. And there's a lot of wonderful artworks there. She's got a guest book, okay, that's got comments from thousands of people. People from 34 countries are in that book, in all 50 states, of course. Glasswork and beadwork and mm-hmm. knitted items, a lot of things that she makes herself.
And the sculptures are very whimsical. They're made out of just sort of derelict pieces of metal, right?
It's iron. It's repurposed iron. And I guess I'm not so blessed with the ability to visualize things. I don't know how somebody can look at, like, the fender off an old tractor and picture, a porcupine or something
right.
like that.
Right. Well,
some people have that talent.
He does. He certainly does. And you wouldn't think that would be connected with someone who is an attorney, but you just never know.
Yes. It's not boring.
Not at all. Our guest today is Mike Bino, editor of Our Wisconsin magazine. What are your favorite out-of-the-way Wisconsin spots? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk. talk at WPR.org. You know, you've got to love the ingenuity of some of the people that we have here in Wisconsin. For instance, we've got a family who didn't have a place to practice barefoot water skiing. So what did they do? What did they do, Mike?
Well, interesting you should mention that particular story. Well, build it and they will come. They built themselves a lake, and they built themselves a lake that's about 2,500 feet long. And it's interesting you should mention this story, because in the tiny town of Alma Center, which is west central Wisconsin, these folks on a farm built themselves this lake, and the 2016 World Championship Barefoot Water Skiing Tournaments are happening there August 14th to the 20th. So that's coming right up here. 150 athletes from 20 countries compete. Now, before this lake existed, it was simply a farm with 5,000 acres of corn and soybeans, 2,000 pigs, 1,500 dairy cows, but what it really needed was a lake for water skiing.
It sure did.
And that's the son Cody Heller talking. He's a world class barefoot water skier, as is his sister Shannon and sister Elaine. They have competed in South Africa, Germany, New Zealand, and they talked mom and pop Blake and Janelle at the farm into going along with having this lake. So they built it there, and in 2005, 2006, they dug it out with a bulldozer and a backhoe and named it Blue Moo Lake in honor of the many, many Holstein cows that helped finance this over the years, I guess you could say.
Right.
And also now cheer them, because when they're out there skiing and they hear the cows in the distance, they like to think they have their own cheering section.
And it really does. You have a great picture here of it from above, and it looks like someone took a backhoe and just slid right through the farmland.
And they do trick jumps. It's world class fast stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's a picture in here of Cody Heller doing a acrobatic jump wearing his Holstein spotted swimming trunks. So a lot of action, and like I said, the world championship is coming up the 14th.
Right. So if you can't get enough of the Olympics on TV, this is a great place to go.
World class.
How can they find out more about that, Mike?
Okay. Blue Moo Lake. It's on Highway 95, halfway between Alma Center and Hixton. Now, you can call them at 715-896-1060 or visit online cowsrus.net.
Because I'm sure cows with an S was taken, right?
That's right. In Wisconsin, I'd have to think so.
I would think so, too. Now, talking about sports, I had no idea that one of our Wisconsin towns has a connection to the old college all-star game.
Well, yeah. I didn't either until I saw that story come in. Now, one of the best things, I'll get to that, but it brings me to a little bit about our Wisconsin. This magazine's been in existence just shy of 4 years, and for me, the best part about working on it is learning about some of the little-known things we're talking about here, like the Blue Moo, but also things in the past. Now, people, football fans, and we're in a football-rich state here, of course, football fans certainly will remember the college all-star game. These games were held from 1934 to 1976 at Soldier Field in Chicago. And it was it was the first professional football game played in the season, and it pitted the previous year's world champions, that was even before there was a Super Bowl, their world championship teams, against the best college players in the nation, 60 All-Stars, including the Heisman Trophy winner, the best college players in the nation, most of them first-round draft choices. Now, these days, with as valuable contracts as these athletes get and having their futures coming out of school, you take the best players and throw them out there and put them in a game and risk banging them up. I don't think that, you know, we live in an age when that doesn't happen anymore.
Right, yeah.
But they came to Delafield, Wisconsin, and practiced. They lived at St. John's Military Academy for 3 years, three summers, 49, 50, and 51. And they lived there for weeks, walking up and down the street, meeting the kids, meeting the people. All-stars like Doak Walker, who was the best college football player in the nation in 1948, made friends with the people in town. And a story about it was shared by Bill Nelson, now of Brookfield, who grew up in Delafield around these pros, and shares a fine story about it.
Yes, it was kind of heartwarming to see that, interpersonal interaction with the stars.
So. He's talking about Charlie Choo Choo Justice, most valuable player in the college all-star game, sitting on the steps at Cather's drugstore, spooning a quart of ice cream, waving at the boys as they came by.
What a great experience. What a great experience.
Fun.
Yeah, totally. Now, you were talking a little bit about the magazine, Mike, and I'm kind of interested in this hidden key thing. Could you explain that contest you got going on?
The treasure hunt?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure, Jill. One thing we try to do in the magazine is be a little bit different and put some different wrinkles in there you might not have in other magazines, but also engage the audience, give folks something fun to do and maybe a fun prize to win. So what Jill's talking about is we have a treasure hunt, and we challenge our readers, you don't have to be a subscriber, but we challenge anybody to go out and find the key to a brand new boat, hidden somewhere in a park in Wisconsin, any public park. And each issue, we give a clue and we reprise them as the issues go on. And also, we put a map of Wisconsin prominently, showing all the 72 counties. And each issue, we eliminate 10 counties. The idea is to take a garbage bag, go on out, do a public service, help clean up the park, and maybe you don't draw attention to yourself and draw competitors, you know, because you got a reason for being there, and you hunt for that key. Now, so far, we've given away two new cars. We've had held three of these so far, and we're into our fourth. We've given away two cars. Last year, family from Shiocton won a pontoon boat, brand new pontoon boat built at Northport Marine in Gillett, and also the motor was Mercury, built in Wisconsin as well. This year we have a Murocraft 1677 outfitter, again built in Gillett, with an Evinrude motor, also built in Wisconsin. So if you go find that key, you get yourself a new boat, motor, and trailer.
It's just so much fun. I'm sure families really enjoy the thought of going out. And you give hints, so it's not like you just are randomly going out. So
our last winners, they surprised me because they found the key in Kewaunee County at Crones Lake State Park the Sunday after Thanksgiving. I mean, it's cold.
Yeah.
And five of them went out, and they whittled it down looking at the clues, got it down to just a couple parks they wanted to go check, found it at the first one. So it's out there, and they're winning these things, folks, so go ahead and have fun. Details are in any issue, by the way.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Mike. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry today on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Mike Bino, editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine. What are some of your favorite Wisconsin places? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Coming up at 11:45, Andrea Russell will join us to talk about yoga. Find out why it's becoming so popular. That's at 11:45, but right now we're talking about the people and places that make Wisconsin so special. And Mike, we were talking a little bit about sports, and I am not a big golf fan, but I think I might be interested in going to one of these
Hickory Golf.
Yeah, that's it, over in Green Lake.
Hickory Golf. For everybody has seen golf courses, of course. Everybody, probably just about everyone has a golfer in their family some way, shape, or form. But Hickory Golf is something different. Nationally, there's a Society of Hickory Golfers that's got an estimated 500 members. And this is throwback sports, folks. This is they're nostalgic purists. And these guys, mostly men, I don't know if any women are in doing this, but they wear their knickers, their flat caps, ties, Argyle stockings. They look like a bunch of deranged Scotsmen out there, I guess you'd say, from the 1920s, kind of lost. And they use vintage clubs, some of them 80 to 120 years old, hickory shafted clubs. And when they haul off and uncork a drive, you don't hear that satisfying ping or whack that even non-golfers hear in their cars as you drive by these places once in a while. It's just a dull thud. But the idea is to, as they say, play the game the way it was meant to be played. For the golfers out there, and I'm not one of them, but I know a little, just a little bit, to these purists, they say that in the modern game, you grab a club and you bomb and chip, hit a drive as far as you possibly can, and then chip away toward the hole. And you try to beat the other players. Well, Hickory golfers find a different challenge. They have to take a lot more time and care in selecting their clubs based on what they want to do on these links-style courses, which have some odd landforms on them. But really, they're playing against the course architect that came up with some very difficult terrain and with the old equipment in mind. Today, most average golfers, decent ones, could take shots right over some of these things. Well, these guys try to play right through them and have a lot of fun as they're doing it. And as you just mentioned a while ago, there is a tournament. Okay, the U.S. Hickory Open is at Lausonia Links in Green Lake. That's going to be September 22nd to 24th. So you can see all these knicker-clad guys out there. Interesting, some of the history here. I mean, the clubs they talk about are called Niblicks, Spoons, Mashies, Brassies, and Jiggers. Now, those names all correlate with more modern clubs, but in our most recent issue, August, September, we've got a two-page story on this, and you can learn a lot about it.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I especially liked to read the article about what they used to create some of these geographical features.
Okay, well, at Lausonia Links Golf Course, through the years there's been rumors that when it was built, boxcars were buried to add some height to some of these, some of the greens and fairways.
Mm-hmm.
And it is true during the 60s and 70s, I believe, at least one boxcar is buried, number 3 green, I believe, and number 7 green. And it's got almost a sheer vertical rise to it. And, well, they needed some kind of a form in, under there in order to get a wall of grass, I guess you'd call it. And so a boxcar was buried. The thought is it's perhaps filled with rocks or gravel or sand or something, but that was the way they created some landforms. I don't think the very earliest course architects in Scotland had that kind of advantage.
I would agree with you on that. Mike, let's talk to Linda in Madison. She has a recommendation for us. Go ahead, Linda.
Good morning. I don't know if you're familiar on Highway 58 in Sauk County. It started out as a natural rock formation, but as years went by, it has had some human plastic surgery to keep it up. It's elephant trunk rock.
Okay.
And the head of the elephant starts out at the base of the top of the structure, and then you see a little bit of an outcropping that looks like a trunk, and then the trunk connects the whole critter to the bottom of the rock structure.
Interesting, Linda. You have seen it?
I've seen it. There is now a sign next to it. When I was a little kid, that was a landmark between going to Richland Center, where we lived, and where my mom's family was in Reedsburg. Oh, there's Elephant Trunk Rock, and we'd all, you know, try to edge herself over to the window to all get a glimpse of it. In fact, we were coming home from a wedding about 20 years ago and pulled the car over to get some pictures. What? And people behind us pulled over and we had no idea what you were taking pictures of, and then we stopped and looked, and well, no wonder they're taking pictures.
I think I have heard of this. Is there like a small little picnic table area that people can stop at nearby? I thought I had heard that.
You know, it's been a while since I've been there. There may be now, but I just remembered it was along the roadway. And if you weren't paying attention, you didn't see it. But there may be now. That was the great thing about it, was that was how my mom kept us interested and tuned into where we were. You know, so we didn't have none of this, are we there yet? We had certain landmarks that she called out, and we knew how much farther it was to get we were going on either end of the trip.
Well, thank you, Linda. That's a great story. Now, everybody that's going to be driving is going to be looking for that rock today.
Slow down, everybody.
Exactly. Okay. Well, you know, talking about, like, landmarks and special things, the Glacier Age or the Ice Age Trail is pretty unique to Wisconsin. And I just kind of thought it would be neat to talk about Pat Witkowski and what she and her volunteers are doing for the trail.
Well, the Ice Age Trail, what a treasure. It's a masterpiece in the making. It's still being built and connected, but there's at least 600 miles are blazed for use now. And this is a trail that's planned to be 1,200 miles long when it's all completely improved and finished. But Pat Witkowski of Oconomowoc, a retired teacher, is one of a handful of women who have hiked the entire 1,200-mile-long Ice Age Trail, and she did it alone. Okay, and Pat, as I mentioned, is a teacher, and so her journey, and she grew up on a farm in Vernon County, so she really wasn't a, she was a worker. She wasn't really a big hiker. Everybody I knew grew up on farms got enough physical activity
that's
without running around hiking and hunting and fishing. Their idea of vacation's more work. But Pat decided to take the walk, and when she did it on weekends, in all seasons, in all weather, never shied from it. When she'd come back to school on Monday, the students had a big map in the hall. They charted her progress, and they asked if she walked some more that weekend, and so she didn't want to let them down. The students were a big motivation for her to follow through. So the Ice Age Trail follows the edge of the last glacier in Wisconsin through 31 counties. It crosses the state in a very circuitous way from Pottawatomie State Park and the Door Peninsula on over to Interstate Park on the Wisconsin-Minnesota border. And when the glacier retreated, as most people know, it left many unique landforms, drumlins, eskers, small kettle lakes, you name it. Along the way, this trail gives people a way to enjoy those unique landforms, enjoy what's going on there, because a lot of this, a lot of what was left by the glacier, of course, you can't see from roads. 1.25 million people use it year-round. Pat, after she did the trail, did the walking, she then went to work on building more trails, and she has volunteered 5,000 hours on this path, and
amazing.
And has gained the reputation of being the muddiest volunteer. That's an image she likes to cultivate, I think, looking at some
sure.
of these pictures. But anyway, the Ice Age Trail indeed is it's a treasure here, and the best part of it is, if you take a look at a map of it, it touches so much of Wisconsin that this is available to, I got to think, the majority of the people in the state. So to find out more about it, you can log on to iceagetrail.org. Okay, and there's also a phone number here for the Ice Age Trail Alliance for a little bit more info, and that's 608-798-4453. Pat's story was fun to share, and it was shared by one of our volunteer field editors, Ann Hatties, who lives in Waukesha County, where they've done a lot of work on the Ice Age Trail.
Lots of improvements. I mean, we're talking boardwalks and chairs and whatnot. So that's
at Lapham Peak primarily. Yeah,
yeah.
3,500 feet of new trail. Yeah, a lot
Amazing.
Going on out there.
Yeah. Well, one of our intelligent listeners has called in, Richard. I hear you've got a little bit more information about the Elephant Rock.
Sure. Yeah, it's north of Ithaca on Highway 58. Between Ithaca and Highway 154, that intersects 58, and there usually is a picnic table there, and there's a pull-off. The county, quite a few years ago, had to kind of reinforce the bottom of the trunk, because it's like a stalactite, but it's sandstone, so, you know, it's hanging down. And
sure.
Some of it had kind of fallen off. But there is also a teepee during summer months set up near it.
Oh, great.
The people that own the land that come right up to it, they have kind of set up as a little wayside park.
Well, how nice. Thank you for letting us know that, Richard. Appreciate that.
So they just did this on their own volition to share it with everybody else and share it safely so people can get off the road and pause for a bit at the picnic table. A wonderful example of friendly Wisconsinites, neighbors sharing.
Absolutely. Let's go to Joan in Madison. She's been waiting for a bit. Hi, Joan.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Excuse me. I just want to mention that one of our favorite places always has been the Dells. My great-grandchildren, we have season passes to Noah's Ark, and we spend the whole day there and get an ice cream cone at the ferry coming home. But I will have to say my grandchildren, which is many years ago, enjoyed the best of the Wisconsin Dells. Then you could take a picnic at Family Land and spend the whole day. You could take a picnic at Noah's Ark. You could bring in your food and have a wonderful time. And the Indian ceremonies was just beautiful at night. Those are all gone. I don't know why. And now they have that big, huge park up there. You have to take a bus to get from one place to another. And everything is all money-orientated. Like I say, my grandchildren enjoyed the best of the Dells, but we still enjoy it with our season passes with my great-grandchildren.
Well, great. Thank you, Joan. I appreciate that. So, Mike, the Dells is a little different now than it used to be, isn't it?
Yeah, but there's parts you can still find if you pay attention. The Dells goes back to settlement times. I mean, the Native Americans were the first tour hosts there, you might say. And it was a very important area for the Native Americans to trade, to travel. You know, the rivers, of course, were highways back then. The Dells, yes, there's a lot of commercial things there. And hey, for my grandchildren, they love nothing better than a water park.
Right.
I mean, you know, they love it. You don't have to go very far to see a bald eagle still soaring over those rocks. Stand Rock is still there. In fact, we had a photo in our magazine an issue or two ago from a person whose grandfather led tours out there, and there's a picture of him with his big megaphone talking to the people in the 20s and then leaping from Stand Rock back and forth to put on a little show for them. And also, I think Joan was talking about the Merrimack Ferry. just up the river. Now, that's still there. It's a free trip, Wisconsin's only free ferry, and as long as the ice is off, it's running. And it's 7 minutes to get across, but at either side of the river, you can get yourself an ice cream cone and enjoy it on the ferry, and it runs up from Merrimack down to the road leading to Lodi. A lot of these things are still there. What we remember in our memories from kids of the Dells, you just got to head a little bit further up into it and keep your eyes open. I believe it's still there.
So the key is just to look for it.
And spend a little time,
yeah.
and not be overwhelmed by the louder things.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Great point. Let's go to Jerry in Oconomowoc. Hi, Jerry. You have a recommendation for us?
First of all, I would say for me, the entire Driftless area for hiking and cycling, and that's quite a large area. I'm not pinpointing in here, but I love the Driftless area. Secondly, you may or may not know that Stevens Point was and still the largest Polish rural settlement in the entire United States, yeah. In not a very concentric circle. And northeast of the point, around the vent, there are still wayside shrines, which you can still see in Poland, for example. And that's a rather unique item. I think I was cycling through there recently and took some photos again. And also, throughout the entire summer, you can go to what was once the original Polish parishes, and they have wonderful picnics with great food. They have a Polish polka band playing, and which is a rather unique scenario in my way of thinking.
Yeah.
And that would be my recommendation, just to tour around the Stevens Point area. Plus, if you cycle, they have a beautiful greenway for cycling. It's about 42 miles. So, and by the way, I subscribe to the magazine, my third year, and we give gift subscriptions to family members now. Love the magazine.
Thank you so much for that love, Jerry. Here's a little bit of love back your way. I couldn't agree more. First of all, you're talking about the Driftless area. I live near Manitowish in Presque Isle. Our office is in Manitowish Waters. It's the North Woods. And what can you say about the North Woods and Lakes? It's pretty. It's wonderful. But honestly, sometimes I think through the years, up north is a little bit oversold. It's got a lot of attention, with good reason, but it gets a ton of attention. For me, having grown up in Green Bay, the Driftless region was something I never knew until I became an adult. And I got to agree, it's about the prettiest area. It's like Pennsylvania. It's got vertical bluffs. It's like Switzerland, winding with the roads winding through it. There's no other part of the state that's like that, and it's not all that big. I think that kids go to Madison in field trips, and they go back home. Maybe they go to the Dells, but people generally aren't taken out to that farm country an hour and a half west of there. And I think it's beautiful. And to your points on Stevens Point, anything that's ethnic in this state is great, and it always leads to great food. So here for the kolachkis and gołąbki and all that good Polish cooking.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Jerry, very much. New stuff, didn't know. That's what's so great about our listeners and this magazine, all these small things that people share with us. So that's wonderful. Let's go to Sylvia in Appleton. Hi, Sylvia.
Hi. I just wanted to let Mike know I'm an original subscriber to the magazine, which I love. I recycle my magazines to some acquaintances, but I always ask for the R. Wisconsin magazine back. And I have them laying on their table, our Wisconsin separate slightly. Their teenage autistic son saw the magazine because I had taken some over there before. He immediately grabbed the magazine and took off to his room with it. So your magazine has a really great effect on people.
Thank you so much, Sylvia. That's the first time I've heard that. It doesn't surprise me, I guess, given the vivid color we try to put into every magazine. We spend a lot of time and effort doing that. We get the highest quality paper we can, and we put a lot of ink down, and that's done on purpose. So it attracts attention that way, but we have a lot of people, we have a lot of animals, we have a lot of we try to get as interesting of photos as possible. So if we're touching people in that way, you've just made my day.
Thank you for sharing that, Sylvia. That's wonderful. And it is a beautiful magazine, and it really does have gorgeous photographs. But, you know, she was talking about sharing, and one of the articles that, again, I was surprised. We've been seeing a lot of these little free libraries popping up around Wisconsin. I had no idea those started here.
Yes. Well, it's that's really something. Everybody knows about little free libraries, I have to think, because I just mentioned our small town of Presque Isle, where we live. It's really a crossroads community with a mini mart and a couple churches and a tavern or two, and in the woods, maybe 500 people in the entire township. But that town, I believe, has four little free libraries.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. But, yeah, the little free library, it's a small house-shaped, schoolhouse-shaped, generally, structure. And it's put up in a town by volunteers who either build them themselves or they can pay for them. These things are numbered through a nonprofit organization. And they put them up, and it's pay it forward. Leave a book, take a book, share with people. And it promotes literacy. It's a sense of community. It's for children. It's for adults. And it's a very warm and fuzzy thing. Well, a Wisconsinite founded this idea in honor of his mother, since she was a teacher and a book lover, and he made one of these and put it up, and it caught hold. How much did it catch hold? Well, they started this little free library as a nonprofit in 2009, as a nonprofit organization. From then until now, there's over 40,000 of them around the world.
40,000.
40,000 of them. They are in all 50 states and more than 70 countries. The man who founded this is from Hudson. His name is Todd Bull. He, along the way, he's had some help from Rick Brooks and Madison, who saw he had this idea and helped him get it going as a company. And it caught hold, and it's blowing and going. I think when we first put the story together, we held it for a while because it had gained some attention and we wanted to bring it out a little bit later than that. I think in the last 3 years, it's gone from 26,000 little free libraries to, 6,000 libraries to 40,000. Just meteoric. And
yes.
What a wonderful idea. And it's sharing, it's heartwarming, and there's good things in it. And again, it's another example of the warm-hearted people in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. Well, it's always fun to talk with you, Mike. If people want to get your Our Wisconsin magazine, where will they go to get a subscription?
The easiest way is you can check online at our website. Go to ourwisconsinmag.com, and there's examples of our stories on there, and it talks all about how to subscribe.
Great. Thanks again, Mike. We'll be having you on again soon, I'm sure. So coming up next, we'll talk about the benefits of yoga. So stay with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.